I usually use about 500 films a year. I know it's a lot, but I photograph a lot. I do know this, but it's my way of working. So I consider myself as working like a sculptor or a painter or a musician even. Is that you constantly work at it until you get that one image or those sequences of images which really tell the story.
Herzlich willkommen zu Kunst in Berlin, dem Podcast der Berlinischen Galerie Museum für moderne Kunst. Mein Name ist Thomas Köhler, ich bin der Direktor des Hauses. In diesem Podcast treffe ich Künstlerinnen, die bei uns ausstellen und Menschen, die die Kunststadt Berlin prägen. Wir sprechen über moderne und zeitgenössische Kunst und die Arbeit in einem Museum. Kunst in Berlin wird präsentiert vom Förderverein der Berlinischen Galerie. Dear friends of Berlinische Galerie, welcome to episode number 18 of our podcast Art in Berlin, our second episode in English. My guest today is the photographer Akinbode Akinbiyi, who has just been awarded the Hannah Höck Prize by the State of Berlin. The prize honors lifetime achievements in the arts and is accompanied by an exhibition. We are currently presenting Being, Seeing, Wandering, which has been developed in close collaboration with the artist. About 130 photographs illustrate key aspects of Akinbiyi's oeuvre. Great to have you here. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Thomas.
Well, I do have some questions because I was listening to you when you talked after being awarded the prize. I've been listening to you at the Niedersächsische Landesvertretung, a very important place in Berlin. And I've been listening to you in Hanover when you did the tour through the show, which took place there at the Kunstverein. So, I mean, as I understood you and your talk, your background is literature.
Yes.
So what made you try out photography?
So I was studying literature. I wanted to do a doctorate in Heidelberg. Photography then was my hobby. And then I suddenly realized one day, actually, because I got a so-called more serious camera, it's more expensive, single lens reflex camera, Olympus, that photography can also tell stories. It's a form of, it's a very good form of narration. And that already was the very beginning of stopping my doctorate studies and going more seriously into photography.
What was the topic of your PhD project?
At the time, I was reading a lot of German literature, but especially Franz Kafka and also Max Frisch. And I actually wanted to write on both of them. And I had not actually got my theme to my professor, but I was really considering doing a doctorate on either one or both of them. But then when I got into photography, I went back to my professor and suggested doing something on photography. He said, no, he couldn't do it in those days. This was in the 70s in Heidelberg.
Yeah, everybody was not very flexible in academia.
Not then. I don't think it still is today. I could have done it in the States. I even thought of going to the States, but then it would have been another move. So I stayed in Heidelberg.
So do you remember your first photographs? Have you kept them?
I have kept some from the Olympus, definitely. But before then, already in Nigeria, in Lagos, I was photographing with the Kodak, what's it called, box camera. And this was at home near the lagoon or the lagoon side. And these photographs already sort of struck a chord in me. I was already at university in Nigeria then. So this struck a chord in me, but I never thought of taking it up seriously. It's only when I was in Heidelberg with this so-called serious camera that it really became something which I felt had a big future for me.
And you have kept some of the early photographs you said. What about your archive? I mean, you have been photographing now for decades.
Yeah, for almost.
It must be huge.
Actually, this year it's been 50 years. It's interesting. Yeah, so I've been very disciplined as regard the archive. And almost from the very beginning, the first film is number one and the year. So number one, 1974. Number two, 1974. And then all the negatives are kept together and the contact sheets are made. They're kept separate. And from time to time, I make prints from the negatives. So that's how it's been going on all these years. I usually take, now I'm using middle format film, so 120 middle format cameras, and I usually use about 500 films a year. I know it's a lot, but I photograph a lot. I do know this, but it's my way of working. So I consider myself as working like a sculptor or a painter or a musician even. Is that you constantly work at it until you get that one image or those sequences of images which really tell the story.
And when does that happen? Do you throw anything away?
No, I don't delete as now, because I don't use digital, but I don't delete. I don't destroy any negatives, or at least I have not done so far. And rather, I keep on editing, looking at my contact sheets and selecting sequencing. So I try to tell stories.
So the city and the urban seems to be a very important topic for you. Could you live on the countryside?
I have lived in the countryside. I do like the countryside, but the city is very much my stomping ground. It's because I've grown up in cities. I was born in Oxford, very small town, really, in Britain. But I grew up in Lagos. When I was growing up in Lagos in the 50s, it was a relatively small town too, about 500,000 people, but now it's 20 million. And it's this mass of humanity which really draws me in. I want to get inside, understand what's going on, what's happening, the markets, the passageways to school, to university, all these kind of things just fascinates me. The architecture, the people, everything. So I keep on working at it.
So what's a typical Akinbode Akinbiyi day when you decide to take photographs?
I photograph almost every day. And what happens is I wake up in the morning, I do an hour of yoga, and then the day really starts. I have breakfast, and then I decide what I'm going to do. Sometimes I read. Sometimes nowadays it's very much emails. And then I do go out and start wandering. And it's open-ended. Sometimes I have somewhere I want to go to. I want to photograph something in Prenzlauer Berg, for example, of a shop which sells underwear. Yeah, underwear shop. But it has big images of almost naked women. This fascinates me. So I want to go and photograph this, but I haven't done it yet. So yesterday I even went out with this in mind, but I went to see my particular tree, which is an oak tree in Rhein-Nickendorf. So then my path took me somewhere else. So this is how it is almost every day. And then I just keep on photographing. But on the way there, I photograph other things. It's a constant coming and going, or give and take.
Are you actually wandering, or do you take the bike sometimes? Because, I mean, Berlin is a big city. It takes a while to wander around. Are you a pedestrian?
There's a very interesting anecdote about the bicycle, because I used to bicycle, in fact, quite a lot. But this was when I was at school in Britain and also in Heidelberg when I was studying. And then one night I went to the post office to take a letter to the post office at night, around midnight, and I almost had an accident, because I was looking around, and I stopped. From that time, I stopped. I said, it's too dangerous, because I'm always looking at, and then not cycling properly, and then I have a terrible accident. So ever since then, I've been a pedestrian, or I use public transport. I can't drive, so I use public transport. But that's another reason why I like to wander. I believe that the slower you move, the more you see. That's my mantra, my philosophy.
Well, that's certainly true. I remember that you did not want to be photographed, which is rather absurd almost, during the opening of the exhibition at Berlinische Galerie. Do people recognize you by now in the city? Because you are here for like 35 years.
Too much. And there was a film made on me by Emeka Okereke. And this film has made me, it's a video film, has made me too noticeable now within the city. And then, of course, all the hype, with exhibitions and so on, and now getting the Hannah Hoke Prize as well. But fortunately, people tend to sort of forget, and then also hopefully forget my image as well. But it's not true. I don't like being photographed. What I didn't is in the photo automat. I've never had a photograph of myself in the photo automat yet.
Okay, you have to elaborate on the photo automat, because yes. I have to say, I think it's one of the most popular pieces in the museum right now.
That's very
People are queuing.
Yeah, okay, that's very interesting. That's very good, because one of my narratives, which is very much part of what I'm trying to understand, is what is a photograph? And I've been thinking about this and considering it, doing research on this for years. And one big aspect is the so-called selfies. People taking photographs of themselves, usually using their mobile phones, but also with the photo automats or photo booths. So I've been photographing the photo booths here in Berlin, and this is the city with the most number of photo booths in all of Germany. And I've been photographing them for years now, decades actually. And some of them have become like almost places where I like to hang around and see how people interact with these photo booths. So I've been photographing that, but it's not so much the photo booth itself, but what is a photograph? Is it a piece of paper? Is it two-dimensional? Is it three-dimensional? How do we look at it? How do we relate to it? All these kind of things.
And it's automatic. And that's almost an ironical view of photography, I'd say, because probably you wouldn't agree, but I think photography is still struggling in the framework of art history to be recognized. I mean, it's probably, well, less intense than in the 70s, but still, it's rather difficult. We have different departments in the museums. We have painting and sculpture considered to be the, well, in quotation mark, most important media. But what about photography? It seems still to be difficult. Take the art market, for example. Take the prices paid for photography. How's your approach to that?
It's over the decades, it's becoming more and more accepted as an art form. From the very beginning, it was an art form. Everything human beings do is a form of art. Be it cooking, washing, you know, inventing things, wandering, everything we do is an art form, especially if it's taken in a very creative, open-ended manner, which is what I try to do. And then what I've noticed of late, especially, is that there's much more appreciation now for photography, especially since mobile phones have come on. So many more people are photographing now, not very sort of creatively, but just photographing. And I think there's much more appreciation for photography now, too. So one thing I've noticed is that whenever something untoward happens, an accident or something happens outside, people are already, the mobile phones are out, taking, trying to make images, trying to fix things, or a beautiful sunset, or my little child, you know, running down the road or something like this. So people are always using their phones now. And of these literally millions of photographs being taken, quite a few are good. So I do look at all kinds of photography all the time, be it on Instagram or in the newspapers, what do you call it, advertisements, all kinds. I keep on looking. And it's a give and take I learned from these photographs too. So photography for me has always been an art form from the very beginning, but now it's really come on board. It's really been accepted. And it's very interesting, this house, Berlinische Galerie, but also I had an exhibition last year, Museum of Modern Art. These are two houses, and there are many more here on the planet. They really appreciate and understand what photography is about. Yeah.
So if somebody asks you, what's your profession? What do you answer?
This is a difficult question. Now I tend to say artist. And they say, yeah, what kind of art? And then I say photography. But I don't like saying photographer so much. I don't know why. I prefer to say an artist. And that's what I also like at airports. When they ask you, you know, sometimes you have to fill in forms. And I write artist. I don't write photographer usually. But sometimes to be more specific, I do say photographer.
Have you ever been working in the commercial realm of photography? Because that's probably part of the conflict, you say, like an architect. Yeah. He is never completely free. He has to do what the owner of the site, or, well, the one who pays, asks him. But what's the conflict when you're a photographer?
Yeah, I have worked commercially, especially initially in the 80s and the 90s. I did architecture, photography, sometimes reportage as well, and also documentary photography. I enjoyed it. But the last 20 years, 25, 30 years, I've gone much more into the so-called art photography. And I always encourage my younger colleagues, friends, to really try to earn a good living doing what they're doing, photography. But it's getting more and more difficult. When I started out, the good photographers sometimes could earn at doing a fashion, I don't like the word shoot, but a fashion, reportage or something like this. They would get $30,000, you know, for one weekend.
Attractive.
Yeah, but nowadays, I don't know. I mean, some still to get this kind of money. And even photojournalists will get well paid, but now it's much, much less. But one can still earn money being a photographer.
Well, in our exhibition, we do have some portraits, which, I mean, I don't know your work that intensely, but they seem to be somewhat an exception. How did they happen? I mean, are they all friends? I mean, there's Omu Si, the fashion designer. There's Nan Golden, another photographer slash artist. How did these portraits happen?
I asked them. Omu Si was actually, I was there documenting the whole, we were doing a workshop in Dakar at the time. So I photographed that particular moment when she received the book of Sibylla Bergamans. But normally I don't do portraits as a portrait photographer, but I do like taking portraits of people I respect. I like their work or know about them or friends. So I do this as well. I have actually a whole series of my family. And I've called this a German childhood because my children are biracial. So their mother is German, I'm Nigerian, and they've grown up in Germany. So I have of them, but other children as well. I've been photographing now for decades to them. They're all grown up and others are coming still. So that's a narrative series, which one day I hope to publish.
Oh, so the family portraits are supposed to be published one day?
Yeah, but it's not just all of my own children, but the grandchildren as well, but other children too. Many of them growing up or have grown up here in Germany.
And literature still plays an important role in your life. You're still writing.
I do try to write as much as possible. I read a lot as well. And it is very much a part of my life. I was thinking about this the other day. Books are for me very important. I've grown up with books. And I've noticed now some young people don't grow up with books. They grow up now actually just with their mobile phone or with their laptop. And I met a young man years ago here in Berlin. He only had DVDs on his shelves, no books. So, I mean, yeah, things are changing. I do understand that, know about that as well, but I still love books.
Probably you could give us an idea what kind of texts you are writing.
Primarily very much on photography, about photography, around photography. Those kind
Makes
of
sense.
Things, yeah.
And you're still teaching, I believe, or have you stopped teaching?
No, I do workshops, master classes. I love teaching, actually, very, very much.
What's the message to the young people in your master classes and workshops?
Do your own thing. Very, very simple. Do your own thing. So you can learn from others. You can look at the work of other photographers, other artists, get inspired by it, but do your own thing. That means try to develop your own way of seeing, of being as well. And it's difficult for many young people because they always feel that you need a role model. You need somebody who is showing you the way. No, you can do it yourself. So I'm very much into that.
So very elegantly, you have made reference to the title of the exhibition again, which is Being, Seeing, Wondering. I was very impressed when Katja, the curator of the exhibition, told me about the numerous visits to your archive. So how did the show finally come together, considering that you have so much work at home?
So Katja and Lena, her assistant, were very, very good, really. Biggest praise possible. Very patient and very, very engaging. And immediately we started, we dug into the archive. And then they wanted to start looking from very, very long ago. So we started. At that time, I was living in Friedrichshain in a flat. Fortunately, I had enough space. So I spread things out. So they would come usually once a week. Yeah, once a week. And we would be looking. It was very interesting because Lena would take mobile images or some certain images. Katja would say she likes this, she likes that. And so that's how we gradually worked it out together. It was really a wonderful collaborative work together.
So to make the audience curious what they can expect here, probably you can give us some details on the different chapters.
So one key chapter is the one when you actually approach the exhibition space. It's called Photography, Tobacco, Sweets, Condoms, and Other Configurations. And it's very much about what I was mentioning earlier about what is a photograph, what is photography. And it's an engagement of visitors with photography, but in so many different ways. And there's also the photo automat in that space where they, if they want to, can enter into it and have an image of themselves and three of my images on the sheet of photograph which comes out. So again, what is a photograph? So that is a very key narrative in the exhibition. But then to the right, if you enter into the space, is African Quarter, also a very important body of work I've been doing here in Berlin since I moved to Berlin in 1991. And immediately this African Quarter drew my attention. So I went there and I've been photographing there ever since. Maybe I'll go there about six times a year.
Perhaps we should explain the African Quarter, as Afrikanische Viertel, a little bit more, because I'm convinced that many people haven't been there or do not know what it is.
Some people actually live there and don't even know that it's the street names are from Africa. But it's a quarter or an area of Wedding, which has over 20 African street names. It's provincial names or names of countries, of rivers and of regions within Africa, and a few names of people who are during the early 20th century, late 19th century, were responsible for grabbing colonies for Germany in Africa. And it's very much a residential area. It started being built up in the early part of the 20th century, but initially it was conceived of as a zoo for so-called exotic animals, a zoo also for people, exotic peoples, people from Africa and from Southeast Asia, usually.
It's an obscene idea,
yeah,
which came to an end, thank God, when the First World War broke out.
Yeah, very much so. But it was not only Germany was doing this, other countries, England as well, France, and I believe even in the United States too. It's really an obscene area. It's still happening in other kinds of very subtle, dubious ways, not so much in the zoos now, but it's just, what's the word, inhumanity amongst human beings is really terrible at times. Okay, so anyway, I went to Africa, African Quarter, started making photographs, especially of the different street names and the streets themselves and where they were leading to, what was happening, the architecture, and the few people around.
So have you been in contact with the activists? Because there's a lot of activism going on about renaming streets, especially if they're named after people being involved in grabbing, as you said, the colonies for the German Empire. And on one of your photographs, there's one street renamed already, but not officially. Somebody has glued another name over it.
Yeah, I indirectly was in contact with activists, or I'm in contact with activists. They sometimes reached out to me because they had seen my photographs or heard about me photographing. And I too reached out to them, because that's one thing with Berlin. It's a relatively small city, 3.5 million. And then the activists are much, much smaller, maybe 20 or 30 of them. And then gradually with time, we get to know each other. And then we just talk about these things. And in fact, I did ask somebody, who are those responsible for putting up that Witboy activist name? And I wasn't given a clear answer. This is about 20 years ago. But recently, I got quite a clear answer now. So these are the kind of things which, over time, you learn about, get to know about. And also, working within a particular area, you actually you become part of.
That's certainly one very important chapter of the exhibition. And how did you pick the other topics?
Oh, yeah. And then in that same space with African Fair is some images printed by me, especially on Durban, eThekwini, a city in South Africa, to where I went first in 1993 and photographed there then and made a book dummy, which I just happened to show Katya and Lena they blew them away. They liked the work so much. So they said, we have to have this in the show as well, too. And then some other, in the big main room or space, is Lagos All Roads. This is an important body of work. I'm still working on it. I too want to make a publication on this. It's about Lagos. This is actually the biggest city on the African continent. Population-wise, I'm not sure about space-wise, about population-wise, bigger now, probably more people there than in Cairo. But Cairo is also a 20 million city too. And then opposite this body of work is a work I did in the early 2000s on Black spirituality in color, which surprises many people because many people think I only photograph in black and white. And this was on Brasilia in one aspect and also on Lagos in another aspect. And it's about this globalization, which was already happening in the 18th, 19th century, transfer of industry and knowledge from one part of the globe to another part of the globe. So it's a pre-globalization movements already then. And then the portraits you mentioned, and then there's a small sequence on fences. And then in the final room is a big body of work on Sea Never Dry, which is my another theme I've been working on for a long time, on how the sea, the oceans, are very much part of our lives. So water, very much this.
So, but you still stayed in Berlin. Lagos is so much bigger, probably much more interesting, more diverse. What made you stay in the city?
It's interesting what you said, more interesting. All spaces, places are interesting. And I try to invest the same amount of interest anywhere I am. And then I stayed or have stayed in Berlin because I like living here. It's relatively easy to move around. It's not so big. It's not like Lagos, for example. Lagos is 20 million. Berlin is 3.5 million. I can't drive. So I use public transport, which is very good, I find, here in Berlin, or at least relatively very good. And then I have family in Germany, so another aspect for me to stay here too. And it's relatively easy to move quickly from Berlin, from Germany, to other parts of the world. This is one thing I've often considered. Perhaps the best city to quickly move out of is Frankfurt am Main, because there the airport is there. You just, boop, off you go.
I agree.
Yeah, because normally from Berlin, you can't fly directly to many other places. You have to always change.
Sadly, yes.
Yeah, and so, I was hoping when they started this new airport in Berlin, but it hasn't been coming.
No. So which would be the next city you are planning to go to?
In August, I'm going to Chicago. I've been working there, but I work there with a theater group. I'm on the board of this theater, and it's very, very insightful, interesting work for me. It's an African-American neighborhood, North Lawndale, and I really like working there. But also I do photograph, I make photographs of Chicago as well.
Well, you seem to need a lot of time to get acquainted with a place, with a new place. So how much time are you planning to spend in Chicago, for example?
I mean, I've been there before, so it's relatively... And I do need time to really get really acquainted, but I start immediately. So after landing, where I'm staying, and then immediately I go out and it's already start taking and making photographs. Obviously, and it's very interesting. I was thinking about this the other day too. Initially, when you see something new, it's really new to you. But a few minutes later, it's no longer new. So this is for me very, very interesting. And then when does the new no longer become new? And it has to do with familiarity, getting to know the new. So yeah, for me, that's always the case. And then one has to be very careful because they say in English, familiarity breeds contempt. I don't want this to happen. So I keep on looking. This is part of the, that's why the archive is so big. You keep on making photographs of things which you think you know, but you don't really know. So you keep on going back.
So perhaps another question to conclude. I remember my first visit to the Museum of Modern Art in New York. You know, and I was kind of shocked when I had realized that they kept the photography department at that time, we're talking about the 80s, that they kept the photography department strictly apart from the rest And we have been talking already about the role of photography. I think this has changed today. But we still have, at Berlinische Galerie, we still have the different departments, you know. So what's your opinion about that? I mean, should museums keep these departments, say, well, this is the photography person, this is the painting person, this is the prints and drawing person, or shouldn't they all come together and work together on their art?
The latter. They should come together, work together on their art. I do understand sometimes the separation, but I very much feel all the arts are interrelated. We can learn so much from each other. That's why I mentioned that from earlier, cooking, washing, breathing. We don't breathe properly. If you breathe properly, it becomes a really art form. Being becomes an art form. All these things. And then we learn from each other all the time. So I'm very much into that, very much. That's why it was very interesting, because I was recently, my first time in Museum of Modern Art was last year, and fascinated how some of the curators interrelate with each other. It was very good.
Finally, I think. Because, yeah, they all belong to some kind of bubble and we're not communicating, which I find very, very sad. Because, mm-hmm. as you said, everything is like belongs together and should be seen together, mm-hmm. even in one space. And that's actually how already the founder of the photography collection here at Berlinische Galerie, how he saw photography. Because that's how we present the collection. Photography meets painting, meets sculpture, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. meets video, for example. Yeah. So probably it's very instructive for the visitors too. That's what I hope. Well, we always ask our guests for their personal Berlin recommendation at the end of each episode. You know the city extremely well. 35 years, that's a lot. Are there places that you'd like to point out what not to miss?
It's a good question, Thomas. I've been thinking about this for quite some time, because I was thinking maybe Alexanderplatz, Potsdamer Platz, Kottbusser Tor, Warschaubrücke. But then I would like to recommend, if they have the time, go to Afrikanische Viertel and take a wander there. And look, at it's changing all the time. It's becoming, it's still a residential area, but it's becoming very quietly gentrified. And then maybe another place, one, if they want to, go to the parks. They have some beautiful parks here in Berlin, and they're really worthwhile taking in. So going there, taking in. Where else?
Well, that's already a big program. I have to take notes. thank you for all these ideas where to go. You're definitely not choosing the postcard motifs. Apparently, you're more into the rougher spots of the city, which are certainly the more interesting ones. That's true. So thank you again for joining us today. We're so happy to have your show at Berlinische Galerie. And we hope that many, many others will come to see what you have selected together with the curators for the spaces here. And I definitely will keep the photograph I took in your photo automat.
Thank you very much, Thomas. And it's been a big, big pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much.
Neben dem Hanna-Hoesch-Preis verleiht das Land Berlin außerdem alle zwei Jahre den Hanna-Hoesch-Förderpreis. Preisträgerin in diesem Jahr ist Özlem Altin, die in ihrer Ausstellung Prisma eine raumgreifende Installation zeigt, in der sie die Beziehung zwischen Fotografie, Archiv und Körper untersucht. Die Ausstellung beider Preisträgerinnen sind noch bis zum 14. Oktober 2024 in der Berlinischen Galerie zu sehen.